This program has been described by AudioVision. For information on over 400 video and audio titles, call toll-free 1-866-966-7667 or visit our accessible website, www.audiovisioncanada.com. The contents of this program are protected by copyright and may not be duplicated or used for any commercial purpose without the express written consent of the copyright holders. Tucked in a valley ringed by mist-covered mountains lies a small town. A small red car heads along the road into town. It passes a sign reading, "Welcome to Vashti, Tennessee." Starring Barbara Mandrell. The car crosses a wooden bridge over a mountain stream and stops by a derelict mine. The young woman at the wheel looks at it thoughtfully. She drives on. Up a muddy road. Burning rage. Co-starring Tom Wopat, Burt Remsen, and John Plachette.
This is Kate Bishop. She's a geologist sent down by the people at the Federal Department of Mine Engineering.
Good evening. I'm not going to try to sweet talk you. We all know that we've got big problems. If it's any consolation hearing it, you're not alone. The coal fire burning under the south side of your town is one of about 260 that we're monitoring across the country. We're not sure how this fire began. An educated guess? Spontaneous combustion. It happens in spent mines such as yours where there's plenty of ventilation and subterranean gas built up. That's why keeping those meters in your basements is so important. We believe the fire will burn itself out. The borehole study the men from our department did indicated there just isn't much coal left down there. Until it burns itself out, however, the south side of your town is a very dangerous place to be. That's why I'm here. I've been authorized to move some of you to mobile homes at the trailer park the government's erecting near the cemetery. You'll be safe there.
Horse pucky! No coal, she says. There would be no fire if there were no coal.
You're right.
I may be ignorant, but I ain't stupid.
We're mine folk, lady. That fire's burning up our jobs, and we want it put out.
Say, pump water down there, drown it.
It's too hot. Water will just break into hydrogen and oxygen, and that'll just add more fuel to the fire. Believe me, there are no simple solutions. And the ones we do have, dusting or digging the fire out, they cost millions and millions of dollars.
Spend the money you're using to move us.
That's right.
It's not enough. And even if it was, I don't have the power. That money comes from the government's disaster fund.
Yeah, I looked into that. It's kind of a catch-22. Disaster money can only be gotten after there's been a disaster. You can't get any money to prevent one.
It's a conspiracy, that's what it is. Have you asked me? Will Lawson's behind
it. The bottom line is she wants us to move. Well, my place is all I've got and I ain't budging. You just go tell that to your big shots in Washington.
Yeah. Don't count on it. All them damn federals do is jaw flap.
Yeah. Now hang on. Hold it. She's not the enemy. The coal fire is.
No, go on. Get it out. Say what you feel. Look, I just started this job, but I've got a feeling if I'd been living with this mess for the last 10 months, I'd probably be just as angry and frustrated as you are. Not that it means much, but I won't leave this town until I've done everything I can to help you.
Kate leaves the meeting with an old man who walks with a cane and a limp.
I would have roped Jane to Hoover, but I heard tell he died. No, it's a conspiracy, all right, mark my words. Yeah, and Will Lobson's behind it. I can feel it. He probably started the damn fire in the first place.
Maybe you started it, J.D. She was just trying to throw us off the track.
Will Lobson's done more for this town than any one man alive.
Oh, sure. Keeping people working down in holes. And then fire under our feet. And then no jobs at all. Now listen, you dim hillbillies. Wise up! If it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it sure as hell ain't no giraffe.
He walks out. A young man in uniform helps Kate with her coat.
J.D. and Larson are the last of the big landowners in the county. Of course, they haven't sat on the same side of the church since Larson's daddy beat out J.D.'s in some land deal back at the turn of the century. Real Hatfield-McCoy stuff.
Outside the meeting hall.
Thanks for the support in there.
Hey, you're all we got. Why step on it?
That's a vote of confidence.
That must be the state agent in me. I'm sorry. You just don't know how frustrating it's been. I've been calling and complaining and writing letters.
I got one of those calls, remember? And I must say, you're a lot more friendly in person than you are on a telephone, Mr. Silver.
Tom. So what next?
Well, I've got to get those people moved, so I guess tomorrow I start making house calls.
You want company?
Thanks, no. I think I need to jump in, sink or swim, all on my own. You don't think that's such a good idea?
Well, I've been living here 8 years, and I got my first invitation to square dance just last spring. Yeah, but give it a shot. We'll talk about it at lunch, over at the diner, noon.
He opens her car door. Drives along dark, rainy streets to her lodging, a large white frame residence that's now a guest house. Kate enters her room. And wearily puts her suitcases on the bed. Goes into the bathroom, switches on the light, and runs the bath water. Re-entering the bedroom, she finds the words "Go home" have been written on the mirror. She turns to see an open window. Next morning, in town, Kate calls on a homeowner she wants to relocate. It's a small house built right against the railroad tracks. The young woman of the house is outside, hanging laundry on a clothesline. Kate smiles pleasantly. The young woman glares back in cold hostility. Takes her child by the hand and goes inside. At the next house,
I'm Kate Bishop, and I'm from the department.
There are small vent pipes everywhere. Kate walks through their smoke to the next house.
Mrs. McFadden?
Kit, you here?
Mrs. McFadden, I'm Kate Bishop, and I
want to... I know what you want. You want to jump me around like a checker on a game board.
If we could just talk for a moment.
There ain't nothing gonna get me to leave my house. And I don't want nothing to do with you or your damn government machines, neither.
Please, you don't know what you're doing.
I know exactly what I'm doing. I called Will Larson. You want trouble? Well, you got it, Missy.
In town, Kate tries to parallel park by the restaurant. She backs into Tom Silver's pickup truck. Tom gets out and goes to her.
I thought you liked me.
Are you okay?
Sure, fine.
I'm sorry. I just shouldn't drive when I'm preoccupied.
I guess not. You want to tell me what was on your mind?
Who or what is a Will Larson?
The Larson estate is a large English Tudor place.
I'm a lucky man.
I have a beautiful wife, two fine sons, and a reasonably prosperous business. Textile, paper mostly. We're in Memphis.
He sits down opposite Kate.
But we still keep up the old family home. Bashtai's been good to us. And if these people really ask for help, they know they're going to get it.
Good. Then convince them to move. Explain the danger they're in.
Oh, well, people in Vashti are used to mining dangers. To them, it's less intimidating than government interference.
Even if it means their lives?
Well, that's what they're trying to preserve. Life as they know it. Folks figure that your moving plan is a sly sort of first step. Next thing, the government's going to be wanting to buy up their homes, the mineral rights. What's that going to get them? 30 cents on the dollar.
We're not in the real estate business. But even if we were, our department's done tests. And what's burning down there just isn't worth mining.
Oh, no.
You must know that, or you wouldn't have closed your mines in the first place and just walked out.
I didn't walk out. Miss Bishop, we didn't walk out. My daddy and I put plenty in this town. We kept this town alive all during the Depression.
Not the state, not the Union.
We, my daddy and me.
No doubt that's why these people respect you so.
Yeah. That and the fact that I'm the richest man in the county. And the fact that I didn't get that way by being stupid. You care for a little bourbon?
No, thank you.
You sure?
No.
Very good. And, it gets better with age. Like, some men.
He lifts his glass to her.
Not always. Some drinks just go bad.
He raises an eyebrow and smiles.
Huh. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask these people to move. They're my people. Most of them will listen. But let me give you a little Blue Ridge advice. Spunky city girl types. They ain't gonna hold around here. And you get into a spitting contest with a skunk, and you ain't gonna win, honey.
Mr. Larson.
No, you ain't gonna win, honey.
Later, Kate stops by a small house in the woods. She honks a horn. Tom Silver comes out to her car.
He called me honey. Can you believe that?
What's the bottom line?
Oh, he talks tough, but he's reasonable. He's gonna help.
He gets in.
Hello? for a big city girl, you sure got your head stuck in the backwoods. You arrive here without knowing anything about the people or the way we live. Will Larson only helps his town when it helps Will Larson.
I've been thinking. Maybe you're right. I did just arrive. Maybe I shouldn't take things at face value.
Especially after that message on your mirror? Why didn't you tell me?
It didn't seem important. Anyway, the sheriff's looking into it. How did you find out?
The sheriff? He was laughing about it over at the diner.
Thanks for coming.
I like Nettie. I like you too.
They stop at Mrs. McFadden's house. She's seated on her front porch, holding an ancient shotgun. A little girl plays nearby.
It's a nice day, ain't it, Nettie?
That it is, Thomas.
What you doing with that old gun?
Ain't nobody gonna get me to leave my house.
Nobody said nothing about leaving.
She did.
She points the gun.
This lady here, she's a friend of mine, Nettie.
Not my business. Truck with whoever you want.
All she wants is for you to put that meter back in your house. If you're gonna live here, you gotta know when the gases get dangerous. You just put that gun down and let me hook this thing back up.
He picks up the discarded gas meter.
Well, I got the summer suit, Nettie. I'd look mighty foolish at a funeral.
Nails shoot from the woodwork. The front porch collapses into a gaping hole. The little girl slides downwards. Tom rushes forward.
Sally, hang on!
And lifts the girl to safety. Tom and Kate hold each other while Nettie comforts the girl. Later, in the neighbor's house.
It's handy having a nurse nearby. I'm beholden to you, Mary.
Why do they call it a coal fire? It sure seemed hot to me.
She's from up north. Don't know about mining and such.
Not cold, sweetheart. Coal fire. Do you know what coal is?
The stuff Grandma puts in her stove.
That's it. Well, underground in the mines, sometimes the walls catch fire. And when that happens, it makes dangerous gases. And it burns underground holes, like the one that made your porch cave in.
We're not going back there, are we, Grandma?
I reckon not. Not till it's put out.
Y'all stay here tonight.
That night in Tom's house, Tom and Kate sit close to each other at the kitchen table, having potato chips and coffee.
You know why we're doing this. When you have a close call with death, you have to convince yourself that you still belong to this world. And the best way to do that is by doing something physical.
He looks at her. She turns away, smiling.
Is there somebody back home?
Sort of. Not really.
What's that?
A good friend. We both see other people. And you?
Tonight.
I don't even know you.
What's to know? I'm an idealistic doctor's kid turned hippie. Student activist turned realist.
Sad, isn't it?
What's that?
Our lost innocence.
Not really. So the system doesn't work. At least not as well as I'd like it to. You gotta consider the alternative. I think that's why I came to Vashti. I came down here with the poverty program. I decided to stop squawking about my beliefs and start living them.
And what do you believe, Tom?
That one man can make a difference. Put my methods where my mouth is. Real cliche stuff. I write a little bit. So within a department, I've got some influence on the environment. I'm working within a system. Granted, it's the left-hand corner of the system, but it's still a system. Tom Silver, mild-mannered agent, Department of Fish and Game. I like it. What about you? A big city girl?
City girl? From Paducah, Kentucky? Actually, it's not a whole lot different than Vashti.
What happened to your accent?
When I went to Washington, I realized that if you talk like Scarlett O'Hara, you end up with a desk job. And I like people too much for that.
Tom leans forward and kisses her.
I'm sorry. I'm nervous.
Kate, this is not a come on. Well, it's a lie. This is a come on, but it doesn't have to be. I'm scared to death back there. I don't want to be up all night alone.
Neither do I. But I still can't stay. Too old-fashioned, I guess.
Next morning.
It was like the earth took on teeth. Darn near swallowed up my best rocker. Nearly got my Sally, too. If it wasn't for Thomas, his friend here.
This could happen again. In your front yards, in your backyards, in the middle of your living rooms.
Could also be that it might not ever happen again, ain't that right?
Are you willing to take that chance?
Would you check my meter just to be sure?
Gladly.
In Mary's basement.
How many times a week does this alarm go off?
3, maybe 4. 1 week, 8 times.
They go upstairs.
Folks around here act like having that thing hooked up in your basement's a normal way to live. I don't like staking my whole life on one little buzzer. It goes off, you know it's no good on the inside. So you open up all the windows, let the poison out. Only thing is, just because you know it's no good on the inside, maybe it's worse on the outside. You just can't be sure.
They enter a child's room where a little boy is taking a nap.
Sleeping is the most dangerous time.
Later, Kate reads a newspaper in the local restaurant. Folding the paper under her arm, she leaves quickly. She marches down the street and into Tom's office.
Listen to this. The recent push of the federal government to relocate the Elm District means we can say goodbye to the possibility of this ever being a mining town again. You know what's wrong with this town? The priorities. Mining somehow seems more important than human lives. Who is this idiot anyway?
This idiot is Frank Vandenberg. He's a newspaper editor, and he happens to be one of my best friends.
In the newspaper office.
Okay, this is looking down from the roof of a mine. Those little boxes are pillars of coal the miners leave to hold the roof up. That's what's burning. Those and pockets of low-grade stuff that isn't worth mining.
Well, there could be new veins, undiscovered veins, couldn't there?
The mines were closed 6 months before the fire started. Don't you think Larson would have left them open if there was any coal left to mine?
She's got a point.
Your editorial, it was a very persuasive piece of writing. Let's just hope it hasn't persuaded anyone to stay in Elam.
Well, I wouldn't have written it if I'd known it was going to happen at Natty's.
What about now?
Why don't you and Tom come for dinner? You'll like Sarah and the kids.
That wasn't what I meant.
Look, I'll still fight you about letting this fire burn itself out. I don't like living over burning briquettes. But I'll keep quiet till you get the people from Elam settled. No point in confusing the issue, okay?
Thank you, Frank.
Later, Kate drives to the meeting hall. A group of people are gathered out front.
I came as soon as I got your message.
Just exactly where are they planning on putting that trailer park?
Next to the old one by that grove of trees.
I guess that wouldn't be too bad.
Will it have a dishwasher and a garbage disposal?
Yes, I suppose so.
Well, that's all I ever wanted.
She never wanted much. Would it be a safe place?
Yes.
I talked to a lot of folks today. These are all that's interested so far. We got five families.
It's a beginning.
At Larson's.
Kate Bishop asked me not to write any more editorials against moving the people out of Elam.
Yeah, I suppose that's best for all concerned.
Not all concerned, where you're concerned. You know, I think it's time that we shook hands and went our separate ways.
Fine.
The editor starts to leave.
How's the family?
Then stops.
Frank, I think you're sticking pretty close. Leastways until we get that old J.D. coop to sell.
At the new trailer park.
As soon as these are in place, we'll put the rest of the mobile homes over there. They got the road dug yesterday, and as soon as the power lines are in, they'll put more places over there. And then after that...
Hard to believe. You've been here less than 2 weeks, and already people are starting to trust you.
Me, you, Mary, Frank, doesn't matter. At least they're safe.
How long are you going to stay?
I don't know. As long as I can.
That night, the police and fire department are at J.D.'s gas station.
I heard those sounds before, but I never paid attention.
Tom and Kate arrive.
The noise is around the garage.
What's going on?
The walls of my basement, they're as hot as blazes.
Since when?
Well, since I just noticed. Then a little while ago, there was rumbling over there by the pumps. You know, I got 6,000 gallons of gas stored underground.
Kate hurries inside with a pocket-sized gas meter. In the basement, she checks carefully for carbon monoxide. They walk into the junkyard behind JD's garage.
Is this a city dump?
Well, it's my dump, but I let folks use it.
No checks, no regulation? That's idiotic.
Take it easy.
Garbage dumps can cause methane buildup.
So can coal fires.
Coal fires also make carbon monoxide, and there's no trace of carbon monoxide in JD's basement.
So you're positive the coal fire hasn't moved here?
What we do have here is just as dangerous. There's enough methane to blow that stored gas sky high.
The townsfolk gather to pump gas into steel drums.
Here.
Tom takes his turn lifting an empty drum from a truck.
Give me that.
Hey, over here.
Seizing the opportunity, the town deputy fills his cruiser.
Excuse me, get out of my way.
J.D. moves through the crowd and confronts him.
Well, hell, J.D. We gotta put it somewhere. Gee, cops are more crooked than a politician, really.
Will Larson pulls up in his Cadillac.
I suppose we've moved about 500 gallons so far.
That's not fast enough. We need to get directly to those storage tanks.
I just called Elko, and the closest truck is in Memphis.
How about the fire truck? I bet that'd pump it out fast enough.
We don't got no storage tank big enough.
Who says we don't? Hey, son! Got a CP in there.
Larson walks to a nearby truck.
Breaker 1-9, breaker 1-9. Everybody needs milk. Come here.
A huge tanker truck for milk pulls into the gas station.
All right, I got it.
With a fire hose over his shoulder, Tom climbs onto the truck. Firefighters make connections at their pumper truck. Atop the tanker, Tom opens the hatch and inserts the hose. Firefighters drop a hose into the underground tank.
All right, let her rip!
Kate steps to the pumper truck. A lever to start the pump. Nothing happens. Everyone waits apprehensively. Then the hose swells with liquid. Crowd disperses.
I guess I'll have to find a dairy for sale. Looks like I just bought me a milk truck.
Larson gets in his car.
No wonder these folks like Larson.
The milk tanker, now filled with gasoline, leaves, followed by the pumper truck.
Want some coffee?
Long as Will Larson won't be sending that one back with a cream.
I keep picturing the whole county drenching their cornflakes in high octane.
Don't worry, it'll be fine. That stuff was unleaded.
What's that? J.D.?
It's that little tank out back.
What tank?
It couldn't be more than 20 gallons.
Come on,
get out of here.
Fire shoots from the ground. Kate, Tom, Frank, and JD watch from behind Tom's truck.
What in the world was that?
20 gallons of gasoline lit by a methane match.
A damn conspiracy, that's what it is.
Garbage dump, that's the conspiracy.
She knows what she's talking about.
Kate, convince me again, please.
Next morning, Kate arrives at Tom's house. Tom is still dressing.
Let's go.
Now?
Now.
Where?
I thought you wanted to be convinced.
What's going on?
I knew I'd never land the funds from the Bureau for another borehole test. But I came up with a plan. I need your help. You'll like it. You get to drive.
Using a small gas-powered drill, they take a soil sample.
You sure are going to a lot of trouble.
I know.
Just convince me.
Yes.
Why is that so important?
The sheriff and his deputy approach.
You got a permit for that?
Since when you gotta have a permit to dig dirt?
It's okay, we're close enough.
Great.
Tom and Kate retrieve the core sample.
What you doing with that?
We're sending a sediment sample to Washington.
That's Tennessee dirt, and it belongs right here.
It's not a federal offense to transport dirt across the state line.
Try to tell me the law?
Well, somebody ought to.
If you're looking for trouble, got it.
This sample was requested by Glenn Goldstein, senior geologist of the Federal Department of Mine Engineering. Now, if you have any problems with that, you best take it up with the federal government.
The lawmen leave. The soil sample in front of the post office. That evening, Tom and Kate dine with Frank and his family.
Quit hiding your carrots underneath your potato, Susie.
JD said the farmer's got his cat. We're gonna die, Daddy.
Damn conspiracy, that's what it is.
It's bad manners to cuss, especially at your mama's table. And it's bad judgment to imitate the town fool.
Can we have a canary?
Ever since you told that story.
It's a wonderful story. It's poetic. See, in the old days, they used to carry canaries down in the mines in wooden cages. The birds would sing. And when they stopped singing, the men knew that the gases were too dangerous. The birds died. They gave their little lives so the men could live. Well, it worked as well as your methane meters, huh, Kate?
Tell that to the canaries.
Are you two going to get married?
Later, at Tom's house, Kate naps in a comfortable chair. As Tom sits down nearby with a cup of coffee, Kate opens her pretty blue eyes.
What were you thinking about?
Actually, the Hope Diamond.
You don't fool around, do you?
Not that. I was thinking. I read somewhere where once they sent the Hope Diamond through the U.S. mail. If it was okay, then our core sample ought to be okay. Don't you think?
Sure.
I wonder if it'll get to Washington before I do. I'm driving back in the morning.
You said you were staying until...
There are only three families resisting. Everyone else is moving. And besides, I can't process that core sample unless I'm at the lab in Washington. I don't want to go.
Then don't.
I don't think we know each other well enough to consider... to decide... I didn't say that.
Consider what?
Tom stands up.
I don't know what you're talking about deciding. Kate. I'm falling in love with you.
Kate gets up and goes to him. They kiss passionately. That night, all is quiet at the new trailer park. The homes are shrouded in mountain mist. in Mary's trailer.
I don't hear that backwater running. Come on, Jimmy, I mean it.
She walks through the trailer and checks the bathroom.
Mister?
She enters the boy's bedroom. His pet hamster is dying.
Hey, mister.
Her boy is unconscious on the bed. Mary listens for a heartbeat, then picks him up. Next morning, the young postmistress empties the mailbox outside the post office. Unlocking the front door, she lets herself in. Inside, she puts the mail down, removes her hat, and sits down to read the paper. In the outer office, half hidden by the frosted glass, a figure is lurking. Quietly, it moves to a door marked private. It's Mary.
What are you doing? You nearly had the life of me.
Oh, sorry. I was just time killing over at the clinic. I thought I would come by and keep you company.
How's Jimmy?
He's better. Thank the Lord. Cursed fumes.
Poor little kid. I know he was scared to death.
He was. He's gonna be fine, though. He's sleeping now. I've been up all night waiting to tell Kate Bishop what happened. You want to get your ears tickled?
The postmistress grins.
I went by the motel. She's checked in, but no Kate Bishop. This is odd, I says to myself. It's not yet 6 a.m. So this hunch tells me to go over to Tom Silver's and check. Well, parked right outside, and you know what I seen?
No.
That whipped his little red car. It's not yet 6 a.m.
Oh, wait till I tell Samson.
I figured I'd better give him a chance to shower and cool down.
Well, listen, while you're waiting, would you mind getting me a cup of coffee? My coffee pot's not working.
Yep. You don't want no fried pie.
Well, you could talk me into it.
At the house, Tom, still in his bathrobe, escorts Kate to her car.
Hurry back now. After all, if you're not here, who's going to be our canary?
They embrace and kiss. In town, Mary crosses the wide main street, carrying takeout coffee in a paper bag. Finds the postmistress lying on the floor, dead. Driving through town, Kate approaches the crowd gathered in the street. She stops. And walks to the post office. She passes the body on a stretcher and finds Mary with the deputy.
Fumes got her. Ain't that right, Mary?
Mary watches as the deputy leaves.
Talk
to you for a second.
June, she was my best friend. She was like a big sister to me. My kid. Last night, I was at the clinic. Then I came to see June. I went to eat his coffee. When I got back, she was dead. Damn coal fire. Terrible fire, that's what it is. Only the devil is not below us. It's right here in this town. Fumes. Was no fumes that got her. Her neck was broken.
Are you sure?
I'm a nurse, ain't I? Those birds are hers. She prided on those birds. They were still chirping when Luke and Mike got here. Fumes, they tell me. I went to call Samson. When I got back, that cage was empty.
Kate comforts her. Later, Kate stops her car at a battered sign reading, "You are now leaving Vashti." She hesitates, wiping away tears. Then turns and drives back into town. At Tom's, she uses the phone.
What do you mean, call the police? The men who did it are the police. June Summers was a federal employee. I am, too. Doesn't that merit some consideration? Yeah, we'll be here. Probably dead. The FBI has no jurisdiction over homicide cases. However, they'll do a civil rights investigation. And if the situation proves serious enough, then and only then will they provide protection.
God bless the system.
It'll take a day or two. If we can connect him with Mary, she can confirm what I just told him.
Good luck. I called the clinic when I heard about Jimmy. It seems Mary was there, checked the kid out, and they left town.
Jackpot. Did they say where she went?
No. She does have a sister in Macon. Kate, I don't even know the sister's last name.
That's the FBI's problem. I'm calling him back.
Call him from another town. The further away, the better.
No way. I can't leave. I will not feel responsible for another person dying. Besides, we need another core sample.
Then I gotta get you a gun you can handle.
I don't know how to use one.
I'll teach you.
If you think I'm bad with a car, I'd probably kill you with a gun.
Kate, you gotta be scared.
I'm terrified.
That night, they take another sample with the drill attached to Tom's truck. The ground starts to rumble under Tom's feet.
Kate, pull the truck ahead! Pull the truck ahead!
She can't hear him. Tom runs, jumps in the truck, and guns it forward. They stop and look back.
That's no methane pocket from a garbage dump. I was wrong, Tom. I was wrong about JD's gas station. I was wrong about the conspiracy. The coal fires moved all the way over to here. Willing to stake my life right now that there is a fortune of coal under this town.
Tom looks again at the flames erupting from the ground. In Tom's house, in his bathrobe, Kate looks at her maps.
The fire's here. The mining tunnel stop here. 3 miles from here. How did it get from here to there?
Which question you on now?
Take your pick. 18 so far and still counting. Coal fires spread through mining tunnels. All the tunnels stop at Elam. I can't figure out how the fire has moved 3 miles away.
Kate, we're looking for a motive for a murder here. It's not a report to the Bureau. If people kill for power and for money and for passion, I think it's pretty safe to say that June didn't die because she was cheating on her husband. So that would leave power and money. And coffee. Want some?
Yeah.
And we'll share.
She drinks from his cup.
Yeah. We'll share.
She kisses him, then pushes him down onto the maps. With Tom kissing her neck, she looks at the map again.
Legal tunnels. Tom, all these maps show are the legal mining tunnels.
Next morning at Will Larson's.
What? Thought you were leaving. The government going to make some more tests?
No.
Well, then what could a little town like this hold for a sophisticated woman like you? Unless, could it be that you've fallen in love with one of the local boys?
Maybe I just couldn't resist talking to you again.
Please.
Actually, I need a favor.
Oh?
I need to know the locations of Vashti's illegal mining tunnels. Look, I know most mines have them. Tunnels that don't quite meet government regulations. And I'm not accusing or interested in prosecuting or anything like that. It's just that I can't accurately judge where that fire will spread unless I know where those tunnels are.
Miss Bishop, neither me nor my daddy before me ever broke the law. There are no illegal tunnels in Vashti.
In town, Tom goes to visit J.D. at his closed gas station.
J.D.? J.D., it's Tom Silver. I gotta talk to you.
Of course there's illegal mining tunnels. That's why Larson's daddy and my mama started feuding in the first place.
Back at Larson's.
Who owns the mineral rights in this town?
In a roundabout way, I suppose I do. Actually, it's a subsidiary of Lars Enterprises.
Subsidiary?
Yeah, they bought up most of them about a year ago.
After the fire started?
You got to remember, there's a lot of people out of work, and these are proud people. They don't take handouts. I knew the mineral rights were worthless, but I bought them up anyhow. As a way to help, with the help not seeming to be like welfare.
Surely not everyone in this town needed money.
Oh, no. But if you offered it to some, not to others, those that needed it most, they see through that. This way, everybody kept his self-respect. You know, it was not taking a handout. It was a business deal.
A very benevolent gesture.
On J.D.'s farmland.
This is all family land. And all them hills, too. Yeah, it's good land. Good land for timber and farming and for just plain living. And that Larson tribe, they came in here and they're tickling folks with dollar wagers and promises, turning half of Vashti into coal slaves. You know, my land is fat with coal. But they just dug right into it, took without even asking. I wouldn't have known except for this here cave-in. My mama found this when I was just a pup.
J.D. opens a wooden door on a hillside.
There you go.
He and Tom walk into an old mine shaft.
There's a whole scribble of these tunnels under our land for miles. You can bet they stopped digging once we found out. Me and mine, we've been vigilant ever since.
You should have sued.
Yeah, well, when a snake buys a judge's morals and a town wants work, you're swimming up a river that won't be swamped.
They turn a corner in the shaft. Ahead of them is the red glow of the coal fire.
Conspiracy. I've been squawking and clucking on that for 50 years. Got to be a damn hobby.
I'm sorry, J.D. I should have listened to you.
Maybe you listen to me now. It deserves a soda pop.
They turn and go. Back at his garage, J.D. holds a black cat in his lap.
Lawson sent me pretty girls. Farmer types.
Bad.
He even sent a fella to offer me a condominium in Florida.
And I realize, of course, that's...
Now, these folks weren't supposed to be working for Lawson, but I could smell that they was. He tried everything to get me to sell.
Kate comes in.
Oh, would you shut that door tight? My kitty cat's a house cat, don't you know? I love this critter like a red-haired stepchild.
When was the last time?
Davy Crockett, that's his name. He likes them sob stories.
And I realize, that's...
I don't watch you myself, but I keep the set on for him. That's Margot.
No, thank
She's gonna
you.
Have twins.
I may not have learned.
The cat watches the soap opera.
Yeah, and she don't know the daddy.
Unless you stop hiding it, you'll be in big trouble.
The last time? Oh, 2 days ago. Fella from across the state. Town of Shamrock.
Later, Tom and Kate are alone in the truck.
Look, we gotta trust somebody, so it might as well be Frank. And while you're talking to him, I'll head over to the library and see if I can find anything in the back issues of the newspaper about Shamrock. Meet me over there, all right? And be careful.
Kate goes into the newspaper office.
Miss.
She walks into Frank's office and closes the door.
I have reason to believe June Summers was murdered. I want you to do a story on it.
Murdered?
There's a witness. She's in hiding.
Yeah, but Luke and Mike said the gas...
Luke and Mike may be responsible. That's why I need your help. Until I can get more proof, I want the people in this town to keep their eyes peeled.
Well, what happened? Who saw it?
I think it's connected with the coal fire.
You think? I mean, you got no proof? Your witness is missing? I can't print a story based on what you think?
Then do an interview. What I think becomes fact in an interview.
I don't know.
We're talking murder here.
Not yet, we're not. Give me an hour or two. I'll get back to you.
At the door, Kate stops and turns back to him.
Have you ever heard of a town called Shamrock?
Shamrock? Why?
Outside by the truck.
There's only one article. It seems Shamrock had a coal fire, too. Frank wrote all about it in the paper about 6 years ago.
How far is this Shamrock place? J.D. said it was across the state. Let's take a drive. About 60 more miles to Jackson, then 20, 30 miles north of there.
Maybe Frank forgot he wrote that article. After all, it's been 6 years. What made you ask him about Shamrock?
Well, Frank's a newsman. Murder stories are news. He should have jumped at the chance to write about June's murder. Unless... in some strange way, he's involved.
A maid shows Frank to Larson's indoor swimming pool. The sheriff and his deputy are there, too.
What are they doing here?
Betty, pour the boys a small libation there. I won't be but a minute.
The maid leads them out.
They murdered June Summers.
It's true, isn't it?
It was an accident. The boys just told me.
How many more lives is this going to cost?
You'll sleep better not knowing. Now, you listen to me.
No, no, you listen to me. Murder was not part of the deal. J.D.'s not selling. You going to kill him? Kate Bishop, is she next? At what magic number does your conscience override your greed?
You're talking like a war correspondent. Actually, Frank, I don't think you should push our very limited partnership.
There is no partnership. There never was. I'm taking my wife, my kids, and I'm moving as far away from this sordid mess as I possibly can.
Yeah. Why don't you do that? And I personally will fry your butt.
Yeah, well, I will keep that in mind, Mr. Larson.
Right. Who in the hell do you think you are? You coming into my home here? You're mandating and expostulating? You little paid whore. Now, you do what I pay you for, or you won't do at all. You understand?
Huh. Larson steps out onto the diving board.
Frank, go home. You go home until I tell you otherwise. Now get!
Frank leaves. The policemen re-enter.
That Bishop woman, she's become quite a problem. See what you can do about her.
Talk about depressing.
Tom and Kate drive into the rundown village of Shamrock. They stop at a store with some locals in front of it.
You better wait here. Some of these old boys get mighty suspicious of them and asking questions.
They look harmless enough.
She slides across the seat.
Kate?
Okay, Tom, I'll wait.
Howdy.
Hey, howdy.
Is this Shamrock?
You've been here before?
No.
Now, this is new Shamrock. Old Shamrock gets over the hill. More ways than one. Over the hill, that is.
I was wondering if you might direct me to the mines.
Now, we was just funning. Old Shamrock is the mines. See that road up there?
Yeah.
Take a right, go up the hill. You can't miss it.
Much obliged.
Now, that's refreshing.
What's that?
No. A woman driving a pickup truck.
Kate smiles at them.
She ain't driving, believe me.
Kate starts the truck. Spins it around in a vacant lot. It screeches to a halt in front of them.
Want a ride?
You sure it's safe?
Not at all.
In Vashti, the police enter Kate's hotel room.
Chicken there. She ain't here.
Tom Silver called. Tom called again. Call Mr. Silver. Let's get out of here.
Then the sheriff and his man go to Tom's house.
Sam Hill is she?
The Shamrock Mine is an open pit. Enormous earth-moving machines slither about in slippery gray muck, moving tons of coal. young man in charge.
Strip mining.
Yes, ma'am. Most efficient way to get the coal out of the ground.
I thought Shamrock had underground mines.
We did. But once the coal fire killed the town, no reason not to take the coal out the cheapest way you can.
No reason at all.
Say, who runs the mine?
I do, mostly. Me and two other foremen. We don't own it or anything, we just run it. A man named Will Larson signs a check.
Larson. He's doing exactly what he did in Shamrock. Buying the mineral rights at fire sale prices, then he's going to level the town, dig out the fire, and then strip mine the coal himself.
At a gas station, Kate hangs up the telephone and walks back to Tom at the pumps.
What were you up to?
A few phone calls. The FBI found Mary. She said her sister's in Macon. They're coming. And some news people for insurance. They'll all be down tomorrow.
They get in. And drive away.
Hey, listen. I know a little motel just outside of Memphis. And it's got king-size water beds and cable TV. We go home in the morning when it's safe.
Sorry. No can do.
Kate, one person's already been killed in this thing. Now, there could be others.
That's precisely why we've got to go back.
That's precisely why we can't go back. We could be the others.
So could J.D.
Frank's involved with this thing. He probably ran to Larson the minute you left his office.
Will Larson wants that old man's land. There's no telling what he'll do.
Let's call J.D. We can warn him by phone.
I just tried. He's not listed.
In J.D.'s junkyard, the sheriff and deputy carry a large tank of compressed gas to an outside basement door. They set the tank down in J.D.'s basement. The deputy disarms the methane gas alarm. They insert a hose from the compressed gas tank into the heating system. One of them opens a valve on the tank. Tom and Kate drive into town, past the sheriff in a phone booth.
We just left J.D.'s.
Is everything done?
J.D.'s all took care of.
What about Kate Bishop?
Looked everywhere. Can't find her.
You better find her.
Let's go.
Tom and Kate pull into J.D.'s place.
Door's wide open. I thought Davy Crockett was a house cat.
Inside, they find the cat lying dead on a chair. They head for Tom's office in town.
But look, we tried, all right? We can't find him. Let's get the hell out of town.
You want to go? Go. I'm not leaving till I find out what happened to that old man.
Inside.
Will Larson is trying to kill you.
Frank is waiting for them.
Red ink one minute, blood money the next.
What? Frank, what are you saying?
About 6 years ago, I wrote a piece on a coal fire in that town you asked me about, Shamrock. It was a throwaway of space filler. Next thing I know, Will Larson drops by, gives me $1,000. Says he'll give me $1,000 a month. You just don't write about Shamrock. When you got alimony, when you got two babies and business caving in. It's damned attractive. Checks came in for years, no strings. Then our fire started, and he said he'd expose me if I didn't write what he told me, conning folks to sell off their mineral rights. And I refused. He threatened to hurt my kids.
So you helped him murder June Summers?
No, I had nothing to do with that, I swear to God. Larson is nuts. I mean, he knows you guys are on to him. He's got these two uniformed Neanderthals, Luke and Mike. They're gunning for you. I'm telling you, you got to get out of here. We all got to get out of here. What authorities? No authorities.
All we got to do is stay with people and not get caught out alone.
Come on. On the sidewalk, the sheriff and deputy confront them.
I thought Mr. Larson told you to stay put.
Y'all just back up. Step right back inside.
Thank you, no. I think I'd rather be shot out here where people can watch. Hi.
Hey there.
Evening.
How you doing?
Hi, y'all.
I'll go tell Mr. Larson you stay on the tail and don't let him out of your sight, you hear?
Hi, how are you folks?
Evening.
Good evening.
Going back with us.
I know.
Keep walking.
Tom, Kate, and Frank enter a bar.
Think we lost them?
I'll have a bourbon, please.
You don't drink.
I've never had anyone try to kill me before.
There's all the more reason to keep a clear head. How about some coffee? Decaf, if you got it.
I can't stand decaf. I'll have a double, straight up.
Yeah, a great time for our first fight.
I'm sorry, lady. We just sell beer.
Of course, a woman like you wouldn't care.
Kate turns to face the deputy.
Is that right?
A woman with no morals.
What could you possibly know about morals?
Kate, enough to know you fooling around with Tom Silver.
She slugs him.
What'd you do that for? I suppose you expect me to finish this.
My fight!
All right, Kate, it's your fight.
Hey, you can't hit a woman you ain't married to.
The deputy trades blows with Tom and two customers. The customers crash through a window with the deputy.
What do you want from me?
I just
want
to get you to a safe place.
Where, like maybe your cabin?
I say it a little louder. Come on.
I'm sorry if I made a bad impression.
They walk out as the deputy subdues the patrons.
Drinks on me.
At Frank's house, Frank enters the living room with two shotguns and a revolver.
I'll take my chances here. I don't want to get caught out in the road with those two goons on our tail.
I guess we just stick together till the FBI shows up.
Guess so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It'll be a while. They're driving in from Memphis.
Well, I gotta check all the doors and windows.
Why don't you head upstairs with Sarah and the kids? Kate and I will keep watch out on the porch.
It's cold out on the porch. I'll stay out there.
It's okay. We need to talk.
Okay.
At Larson's.
You're doing good, Mike. Like sitting ducks all in one nest.
The cops load another gas tank into their cruiser.
Lightly, lightly, lightly. If you boys lick this, you'll have a fat share of a $1 billion coal mine. See you at church.
Larson watches as they drive away. At Frank's, Tom patrols the porch. He leans against the railing, pistol in hand. Kate brings him coffee.
I'm sorry.
Don't be. That little brawl down there might have saved our lives.
I should know by now. Never fight with someone you care about. especially when you're being hunted by mad dog killers.
Sometimes you cannot control the way you feel or the things you do.
You can be so understanding sometimes.
I was talking about myself.
And other times, so headstrong.
Me? I love you.
I'm beginning to think that's a liability. I don't want to be held tight. If you need that, I don't think we have a future together.
I suppose I can try and understand that.
Good. Because you're going to have one heck of a chance right now to prove that. I'm going back to JD's.
Now?
I can't stay here. I have to know that I've done everything I can to find him. You have to stay and keep an eye on this family. What I'm trying to say is I'm going alone.
He offers her the pistol. She takes the gun and kisses him. At the end of the porch, she turns.
Tom, I've got some vacation time coming. Maybe we could take it together.
He escorts her to the truck. They kiss again. Drives away, and Tom returns to the porch. Across the dark fields, a police cruiser nears the house. Carrying the compressed gas, the sheriff and deputy approach the outside entrance to Frank's basement. Carefully, they descend the steps and close the door after them. Once in the basement, they set the tank down quietly next to the furnace. Outside, Tom guards the house with a rifle. The sheriff tries to open a furnace duct. Suddenly alert, Tom cocks the rifle. Below, the cops listen fearfully. Outside, Tom can see nothing wrong. In the basement, the cops attach a regulator to the compressed gas tank. Sheriff puts a hose through the furnace filter. Then he opens a valve on the regulator. Deadly gas enters the house as Frank's wife and children sleep upstairs. Nearby, Frank dozes in a chair, a shotgun in his lap. The sheriff and deputy sneak off. Upstairs, Frank is awakened by the television.
He's hit! He's hit! Grab the horses! Quick!
Switching the set off, he stands and drapes a quilt over one of the children. Kate drives into town through fog and light snow. Stops at JD's garage. She gets out of the truck and closes the door softly. She goes back, gets the gun from the front seat, and approaches the building warily.
A double barrel to put you where the sun never shines.
JD, it's Kate.
Miss Bishop? Oh, Miss Bishop. I ain't got no gun. It's just a scare tactic.
You're okay. You're okay. We came by.
They killed my cat. The cat was the only kin I got left. It was sort of a house cat, don't you know? Honest, Miss Bishop, sometimes life is just nothing but puke sandwich. It was meant for me. I was out taking my walk and I left a set on for Davy. When you see how they've done it, leaving evidence and all. Well, I guess you're the law. Who's going to stop you?
We've really got to get over to Frank's. It's not safe here.
Gas the room. That's what they did. When I found him, I didn't know what to do. I walked over to the cemetery and dig him a proper grave. When I got there, I was mourning, so I plumb forgot Davy.
It must have been when Tom and I came by, we were looking for you. And the door was open and we couldn't figure out what happened.
Well, I buried him proper, I did.
At Frank's house.
Where's Kate?
She'll be back in a bit. She went to find JD.
Some kind of lady.
Frank looks at Tom.
Thanks. For being such a good friend.
Tom smiles. Upstairs, as the invisible, odorless gas seeps in, Frank's family sleeps. JD shows Kate the lethal apparatus in his basement.
Come here. Now look at this.
Kate looks at the gas tank in horror.
Oh, dear Lord. Quick, where's the phone?
We don't got no phone.
Come on, JD.
JD and Kate jump in the truck and speed away. Frank's wife stirs in her sleep without waking. Racing through the night, JD and Kate arrive at Frank's. Kate and Tom run upstairs. In the bedroom, Tom picks up Frank's unconscious wife. Frank takes his children.
Okay, call the ambulance.
victims downstairs.
JD, open the windows! Emergency at Frank Vandenberg's. We need paramedics. His kids aren't breathing.
Tom and Frank get the family outside.
Tom! Give me a hand.
Frank's little girl is the last to come around.
Yeah. She okay?
Next morning, Will Larson arrives at church. The usher greets him.
Hey there, Miss Larson. You staying for the funeral? John Summers, the casket's back in the vestry. They're having a service right at the church.
He passes the sheriff on his way in.
Good morning. Everything is just fine.
Larson enters the church. Sits near the front. Smiles. Tom and Kate sit nearby. The sheriff and deputy, still in uniform, sit at the back. The pastor walks to the pulpit. Tom speaks to him.
Reverend, do me a favor. Don't start anything out, not just yet.
His family walk in. They sit just behind Larson. Frank looks at him accusingly. Larson stares back in disbelief. Mary and Nettie McFadden are there too. Then J.D. enters down a side aisle, coming toward Larson. Larson looks at J.D. in bewilderment and alarm. With a face as hard as granite, J.D. advances. Moving closer still to Larson, J.D. gives a small signal. Watches as three FBI agents approach the sheriff and deputy.
Would you two mind coming with us?
They're marched out under arrest. JD sits next to Larson, leering at him. Everyone's eyes are on him. Larson stands and stiffly walks away. He starts down a side corridor. Outside the exit stands an FBI man. Recoiling, he walks farther on. Larson passes the nursery and washrooms, stopping often to look back. Cove. He sees the postmistress in her coffin. Larson turns a corner and descends some stairs. outside the rear exit, two more FBI men appear. Larson retraces his steps with an agent following him. In the church again, FBI agents approach him, handcuffs at the ready.
Take your hands off of me. I'm a gentleman.
As they start out, J.D. confronts them.
Gentlemen, huh? If you're what gentleman's all about, I'm glad I'm just an ignorant old coot. Me and mine, we never had no manners.
Furious, Larson wipes the spit off his face. With the agents, Larson walks out slowly past the congregation. Kate lean on the hood of Tom's truck.
What you thinking?
About the town. We have to move the people again. And I want to do a complete new borehole study. And that disaster funding, maybe now Vashti qualifies. Can you look into that? Oh, and the mineral rights, and...
Kate smiles at him.
What about you? What are you thinking?
About the hood diamond, actually.
Come on, I'll buy you a cup of decaf.
To me, you are the hand that I reach for. When I've lost my way.
This described version of Burning Rage was created by Audio Vision Canada. The narrative description was written by Robert Goodman, narrated by Valerie Hunter, and produced by Marco Sorin. For other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audio Vision Canada, call toll free 1-800-567-6755. Cast: Kate Bishop, Barbara Mandrell, Tom Silver, Tom Wopat, J.D. Moses, Bert Remsen, Frank Vandenberg, John Plachette, Mary Harwood, Carol Kane, Will Larson, Eddie Albert, Nettie McFadden, Mary Grace Canfield, June Summers, Terry Gardner. Supervising producer and unit production manager, Wally Sampson. Music by Robert Drasnin. Edited by Peter E. Berger. Art director, Richard Berger. Director of photography, Isadora Mankowski. Teleplay by Carol Ann Hoffner and Clifford Campion. Story by Carol Ann Hoffner and Evan Archard and Jeffrey Benjamin. Produced and directed by Gilbert Cates. The song, To Me, performed by Barbara Mandrell and Lee Greenwood. Recording courtesy of MCA Records. Composed by Mac David and Mike Reed. Special thanks to Lake City, Tennessee, Carryville, Tennessee, and the Tennessee Film Commission. A Gilbert Cates production.